Everybody,
Om Agana Timurandasya Giranjana Salakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shigro Shiyuta Parakamalam Shigrom Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Prajana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shivasakam Svitamscha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavane Shri Vrishubhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakapa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sinubhyevacha Patitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 5 Chapter 18 The residents of Jambudweep offer prayers. Text 28. Bhavan Yuga Hanta Arnave Orami Malini Shonim Imam Oshadi Virudam Nidim Maya Saha Uru Kramate Aja Oshaja Tasmai Jagat Prana Gana Atmane Namaha Iti Bhavan Yugandharnava Urmi Malani Shonim imam oshadi virudam nidim Maya sahoru kramate ja osaja Tasmai jagat prana ganatmane namati Bhavan Yugan Tarnava Urmi Malani Shonim Imam Oshadi Virudam Nidim Maya Sahoru Kramate Osada Tasmai Jagat Prana Gadatmane Nama Iti Bhavan Yugan Tarnava Urmi Malani Shonim Imam Oshadi Virudham Nidim Maya Sahoru Kramate Ja Ojasa Tasmai Jagat Prana Ganatmane Nama Iti
Bhavan Yugan
Bhavani Gandharva Urmi Malani. Devastation at the end of the millennium. Orami Malani, possessing rows of big waves. Shonim, the planet Earth. Imam, this. Oshadi, Virudam. Of all kinds of herbs and drugs. Nidim, the storehouse. Maya, me. Saha, with. Uru, great. Kramate, you roamed. Aja, O unborn one. Ojasa, with speed. Tasmai, unto him, Jagat, of the entire universe, Prana, Gana, Atmane, the ultimate source of life. Namaha, my respectful obeisances, Iti, thus. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O Almighty Lord, at the end of the millennium, this planet Earth, which is the source of all kinds of herbs, drugs, and trees, was inundated by water and drowned beneath the devastating waves. At that time, you protected me. Who's speaking here? No, it was the residents of Jambudvipa. So, the Vaivashvata Manu is speaking. Along with the earth and roam the sea with great speed. O unborn one, you are the actual maintainer of the entire universal creation, and therefore you are the cause of all living entities. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Please repeat. O Almighty Lord.
At the end of the millennium.
This planet Earth. Which is the source of all kinds of herbs, drugs, and trees. Was inundated by water. And drowned beneath the devastating waves. At that time you protected me. Along with the earth. And roam the sea with great speed. O unborn one.
O unborn.
You are the actual maintainer of the entire universal creation. And therefore you are the cause of all living entities. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Purport, envious persons cannot appreciate how wonderfully the Lord creates, maintains, and annihilates the universe. But devotees of the Lord can understand this perfectly well. Devotees can see how the Lord is acting behind the wonderful workings of the material nature. In the Bhagavad Gita 9:10, the Lord says, Maya dakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetu nanena kunteya jagat vi parivartate. This material nature is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, and is producing all moving and unmoving beings. By its rule, this manifestation is created annihilated again and again. All the wonderful transformations of nature are happening under the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Envious persons cannot see this, but a devotee, even though very humble, and even if uneducated, knows that behind all the activities of nature is the supreme hand of the Supreme Being. Verse again, Bhavan Yugan Tarnava Urami Malini Shonim Imam Oshadi Virudham Nidim Mayasaho Ru Kramateja Ojasa Tasmai Jagat Prana Gatatmane Nama Iti. O Almighty Lord, at the end of the millennium, this planet Earth, which is the source of all kinds of herbs, drugs, and trees, was inundated by water and drowned beneath the devastating waters. At that time you protected me along with the earth and roamed the sea with great speed. O unborn one, you are the actual maintainer of the entire universal creation, and therefore you are the cause of all living entities. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pasyatya De Satarane. In this verse it mentions that Krishna, he's the source of everything and he's maintaining everything as well as annihilating everything. Sri Sti Stiti Pralaya Sadhanam Shakti Eka Chayeva Yasya Vibhavani Vibharta Durga Ichchana Rupam Api Yasya Chate Chate Sa Govindam Adi Purusham Tamahang Bhajami. Krishna's shadow called Maya is creating, maintaining, and annihilating the universe. Therefore, Lord Brahma offers his respectful obeisances unto Govinda. Not that Govinda is some ordinary personality doing ordinary things, but somehow or another, by popular vote, he's been put into a position where people are respecting and worshiping him. Or he can produce some dust, a little magic, and therefore he's worthy of everyone's worship. Well, Krishna's magic is quite extraordinary. To create a universe is not an easy thing. For us to do it, it would take a lot of nails, a lot of engineering work. It would take quite a bit to create even one small planet. But we're very proud that we're creating skyscrapers. Just like Ravana was trying to create a staircase by which everyone who is impious could go to heaven. And when they got up to heaven, all the pious people, they throw them down into hell. So there's an attempt to always, on the part of the demoniac, to change the way the universe is set up. Because everyone thinks it's imperfect. They think that if I was the supreme in the universe, everything would go a lot better. Unfortunately, due to some mistake or misorganization, or lack of knowledge. They haven't put me as the supreme yet. But by my preaching and my prowess, by my education, certainly in the future that will happen. There's even a religion where they have multi-level marketing for becoming God. Their idea is that Jesus Christ was the head, what do they call it when someone's ahead of you on the line of marketing?
Upline.
He was the upline. And that his basically, he came here to get a downline. He's training people up so that eventually when they're a little more qualified, they can take over a universe also, like he has, and then he can be on the upline taking care of a few universes. Just like above him, there are other persons who are taking care of more universes than he is. And this way, eternally one gets progressive until you have thousands and thousands of universes to take care of and you have a big downline. Maybe you get a better house to live in when you get a bigger upline. I don't know exactly what the benefits are, but certainly you can feel proud that I've taken care of so many universes. But here it says that that's not the way things actually go on. That there is one person who is eternally is the chief and everyone else is the subordinate. Eko bahonam vididati kamam nityo nityanas chaitanas chaitananam eko bahonam vididati kamam. That one chief, he's fulfilling everyone's desires, and here in the material world we desire to be put into the material consciousness, where we imagine ourselves to be something independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But here, as in other places, it mentions that Krishna is so powerful that everyone's always dependent upon him 100%, especially in the material world. Lord Brahma, he says, Yatschaksha Esha Savita Sakala Grahanam Raja Samasta Surmurti Ashesh Teja Yasyagaya Brahmati Sambrita Kalachakro Govindam Adi Purushantamahang Bhajami. Again, he's saying that the sun, full of infinite effulgence, is the eye of the Supreme Lord. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati translates Sura Murta. Sura means demigod, and Murti means the image or the form. So he's the form of the, he's the best of the demigods. So why is Lord Brahma worshipping Govinda? Because this very powerful sun is maintained in its orbit by the will of Govinda. According to the scientists, if the earth came a little closer to the sun, or vice versa, then the whole earth would burn up immediately. You could save so much money on gas, you just take your bread dough and you throw it on the street, immediately it's cooked, maybe a little crispy. Well done. And if the earth moved a little further away from the sun, everything would freeze. Everything would be in deep freeze. But, somehow or another, though, either the earth or the sun is moving at a rapid speed, there is an orbit that's maintained, a relationship between the earth and the sun, which is always exact. If the earth moved a little slower, of course we understand the sun's moving, but either way, if one of the earth or the sun was moving a little slower, then everything would be disrupted here. Such a precision is moving at. And yet, the scientists say it's all by accident. Of course, if you ask them to create such an accident, build a little sun, after all, if they have enough intelligence to understand that it's an accident, they should understand how accident means something that's much simpler than something complicated. Accidents don't come about because of intelligence. They come about in the absence of intelligence. So since they're very intelligent, the scientists, to figure out that there's no intelligence, so they should have enough intelligence to create at least little sun. And they should be able to put the little sun over the North Pole and help out the Eskimos. Or if they say that's too much, at least let them create a little sun the size of a lamp or a light bulb and let them give it out to all the people in Dallas City, and they can all have a little sun in their house and they can save so much on electricity. But they can't even create a sun the size of a thimble. And yet they claim that this sun, full of infinite effulgence, has all come about by accident. But how the accident came about, they don't know. Who created the accident, they don't know. Or how it was created. So it's all completely mental speculation. The scientists, but somehow or another, they're given some credit by other foolish people. But Brahma says, Lord Brahma, that from our experience, whenever we see an intelligent creation, we know that there's an intelligent person behind the creation. No one will claim, as you know, that this building came about by accident. You've heard the Big Bang Construction Company, where they, in order to renovate your house, I think Maturanath is in the house business. So just imagine he hires for one of his houses the Big Bang Construction Company. And he pays them a lot of money. And they come in, although it's a bargain, they say. They come into the house with dynamite. He said, what are you doing? Well, this is, after all, this is the Big Bang Construction Company. What do you expect? And suddenly everyone clears away out of the house. And they pull the plunger. And there's a big explosion, and the house explodes into pieces. He said, what did you just do? Well, it takes a little time. You have to be patient. may not have worked that time, but we just got to try it again. So they sweep up all the pieces, they put some more dynamite, and they explode whatever's left again. And they said, what are you doing? Just be patient. If it worked for the universe, it should work for you. So, of course, this is all foolishness, because from our every point of our experience, we can see that there is no evolution or evolving of the universe. Intelligent beings come from intelligent people. As I've mentioned before, just like you can imagine, if you were trying to find out what your ancestry was by the standard method of looking through your family album. So we can imagine everyone's looking at their family album, mother, dad, and sister, and brother, and pet parakeet are all sitting around trying to see who their ancestors were. And you turn some pages, and daddy was a general, and the great-grandfather was a general in the Civil War, and grandmother was, a pastry chef somewhere from France. And you keep on turning, and you see a Mayflower. Your great-great-grandfather came over in the Mayflower. And your great-great-grandmother was an engine. So you keep on turning back and back and back. And then finally, you see that there's one distant ancestor, great-great-great-great-grandfather and mother, and they're covered with hair. And you ask mother and dad, who are they? Well, we didn't want to tell you, but that was Grandfather Harry. And that was Grandmother Lucy. And you keep on turning the pages and you see that there's a mouse. And where did this come from? And then finally you get to the end of it and you find two rocks. And you ask your parents, well, what is the story behind this? Well, your parents say, well, what we've heard is that your most distant ancestor, Mr. Rock A, Mrs. Rock B, they got together and two rocks, they met each other and they fell in love. And somehow or another, they produced a mouse. And the mouse later on gave birth to a monkey, one of the mice, and the monkey wound up swinging from the family tree. So anyone who would hear this, they think that this is simply a mental concoction, or it's just fiction. Someone made it up. But this goes on the name of science, which is not really science. It's simply a different version of science fiction. It's a high-paid science fiction, that's all. Generally, science fiction, there's a select audience, but here they make it so that they build museums so everyone can see and hear and read about their science fiction. Because there's no experience for monkeys, human beings come. We don't go to the forest and find little babies being given birth by chimpanzees. Nor do we find mice giving birth to chimpanzees. From mice come mice, from chimpanzees come chimpanzees, etc. Because they have this theory of mutation, although they've never seen anything that's mutated into anything else but the same species. For instance, they took this Androphilus fly and they bombarded it with radiation, trying to mutate it so it would come out into some other species. But lo and behold, all they could do is change some of the features of the fly. Instead of having two eyes, they could give it four, it had four or six wings instead of four. They kept on bombarding it. Most of the flies, they died. And finally, the end result is that after bombarding the flies that survived enough with radiation, they came back to the original fly. So they gave up on that experiment. Of course, later on they found that there were some moths in England that as the air changed, as it became more polluted, they found out that there were actually the white moths had changed into black moths or brown moths. So they said this is an example of adaptation, that the white moths adapted to the color of the sky in order to protect themselves from the predators. Because if they're white, they'd stand out against the black sky. And then someone had the good sense of washing one of the moths, and they found out that actually it was still a white moth. It was just covered by all the pollution, so it appeared to be brown or black. Therefore, all these attempts to explain mutation have been a failure. The fossil record is also doesn't indicate any systematic progression of the species or evolution of the species. So there's no empiric evidence, there's no method by which the moths become white or green or black. So it is more or less a mental concoction. The theory is never proved, but it's simply a hypothesis without any empirical evidence. But there's plenty of empirical evidence that from intelligent beings come intelligent creations, and from dead matter comes nothing. We have that daily in our experience. But still, so-called scientists don't accept the basic premises of the philosophy. Why? Because here it explains, because they're envious. That's all. Idam tute guyatamam pravaksham anushuyave jnana vijnana saitam yajgata moksha se shuva. Because you're never envious of me, Arjuna, therefore I can explain to you these things. But because they're envious, they won't listen. They won't listen to Krishna. They won't listen to his representatives. Therefore, no matter how much you try to explain it to them, they'll never understand it because they don't want to understand it. Who probably gives the example, if someone's asleep, it's easy to wake them up. But if someone's actually awake, but they're pretending to be asleep, then it's very, very difficult to wake them up. Similarly, if one doesn't want to understand that God is a person, and that he's controlling things, then the result is they'll never be able to understand it. And it doesn't matter how many fools get together and think the same way, Just like Prabhupada would say, if you add zeros together, many, many zeros together, you'll wind up with the same result, zero. So how many foolish people, descendants of monkeys, how many they get together and they all look at each other and jump up and down and proclaim themselves to be king of the apes. Still, because they can't hear, therefore they can never actually understand. Dharma priyodita kaitavotra paramo nimatsaranam sita. Nimatsaranam, those who are free from envy. They can kick out the witch-like intoxication with fruitive activities or material dharma, which results in fruitive activities simply to gratify the senses, or the so-called liberation emerging into Brahman. They cannot understand the difference between themselves and their body. They cannot understand the existence of the supreme goal in life. Simply they work hard to get money and enjoy the temporary senses. And after leaving the body, they come back to do the same thing over and over again. Therefore Krishna says, Ye me matamidam nityam anutishti manava sharavantana siyanto mutante tepi karma vi. That those who follow my injunctions without envy, gradually they become free from the bondage of fruitive activities. In other words, Krishna is giving a simple formulas by which we can become free from our material misconception. But those who have rejected the idea that there's such a thing as material misconception, who refuse to conceive of themselves as anything other than a body with a material mind at best, then there's no question of liberation. For them, liberation means to become free from all the restraints that are imposed endlessly and incessantly and unlimitedly gratifying the senses. They think liberation means to be liberated into the animal species of life. So such persons, when they hear about restraint and restriction, they become very disturbed. Just like modern psychology, which has even become popular within ISKCON, is all based upon such humanistic proposals that we should become unrestrained, that all our difficulties and anxieties are all caused by the fact that we're not free to gratify our senses and mind unlimitedly. Of course, if there are no restraints, or we can do whatever we want, then there might be a few problems. Like for instance, if I'm hungry and you look good to eat, then it may be so-called uninhibited for me to eat you. But it would probably put a damper on your particular future and desires. So obviously there has to be some restraint, some restriction somewhere, like even if you can't love your neighbor, at least don't eat him. Ten Commandments, my Ten Commandments, don't eat your neighbor. Wait till he dies and then try to get a wing at least. Chip into the funeral and maybe they'll give you an arm or a leg. Similarly, other problems may persist also, that I want to have sex life with anything that moves, anything that walks, and what to do with the children. They may, of course, the theory is that they're not really human beings until they can protest or vote. And therefore, what to do with them? Well, maybe you should do something. They should be productive. You can eat them. That time is coming. And everything should have its use or else it's useless. And then you do what's necessary according to your imagination and feelings to deal with things. So, of course, this humanistic idea that we should be free to do whatever we want, whenever we want, it's not just an idea, it's pervaded the entire society. The idea that there's actually an ultimate authority and that we have to follow the rules and regulations that authority even if we don't want to, even if it seems to be frustrating to us, even if it's against my basic so-called psychological, psychophysical nature, then this people cannot accept. Even the devotees sometimes can't accept it. I have so many problems. I have so many psychological problems. I have so many emotional hang-ups that how is it that I have to follow the things that I don't want to do? Maybe first let me become purified by following some psychological process. Feel good about myself. Why should we feel good about ourselves? About which self? We don't even know who we are. How can we feel good about ourselves? Just like when someone puts you into a prison and you feel very depressed. Because in the prison you're being tortured regularly by the guards, and you're being called ill names. The prison is cold, and sometimes it's too hot, and the food's not very good. And some psychiatrist comes and tells you to feel good about the prison. That will help you improve your position. Why should you be feeling good about the prison? It's a terrible place. Not that you should adjust to the prison and feel good about it, and that will solve your problems. You should try and get out of the prison. Then you'll feel good. You should come back to normal life. Not that I'm in the prison, I become so attached to the prison, I so feel good, so good about the prison, that even they open the doors of the prison, I won't go out. Just like in India, they train a bird sometimes, that the bird goes out of the cage, does a little dance, and then at the command of the owner of the bird goes back into the cage. So this humanistic psychology or philosophy simply is to help people stay in their cage and get one cage after another. And the idea in the future, if we follow this humanistic philosophy, then we'll become so purified that we'll accept Krishna conscious philosophy. That's not very likely. Because we develop a taste for independence, then why would we suddenly want to become subordinate? If we're actually happy being independent, which will never happen, then why would we want to put ourselves in dependency? The fact is, we're not unhappy because we're not dependent on Krishna. And any philosophy that doesn't help us become dependent on the Supreme Controller, who tells us that we can be independent, is just a philosophy coming from Maya. Humanistic psychiatry or psychology, wears the base its ontological premises, but in simply mental concoction coming from other mental speculators, which is basically founded in Maya, and the false premise that we're free to become independent from Krishna and from his laws. Instead, one should find out how the material nature is working, and then accordingly adjust our lives to fit material nature. Not that we're going to figure out how we can get around material nature, so we don't have to adjust our lives. We can feel good about our lives, and at the same time not get the reactions from material energy. That's not possible. It's simply a dream. Therefore, the psychiatrists, the psychologists in general, the scientists, the philosophers, they're all envious of Krishna, because Krishna is telling them what to do. He's telling everyone what to do, of course, according to their time, place, and circumstance. But ultimately, Krishna says, sarva dharma parityaja, surrender to me. That if you don't surrender to me, then you have to surrender to illusion. And people don't like that choice. They think they should be free to do whatever they want and not get any consequences. But Krishna says it's very simple. Either you surrender to me, or you're in the bodily concept of life, and working under the bodily concept of life, you'll get one body after another. And there's no way around it. You can't vote the laws of nature. You can't go around the material nature. You can't discover something that goes beyond material nature, the laws of nature. They're already fixed, the laws, and no one has ever changed them, even in the slightest, since time immemorial. Everyone has died since time immemorial, even Hiranyakashipu. He went through an austerity where he stood on the tips of his toes for 120 years of the demigods, which is, at least, you have to multiply that by 180, at the very least. He understood that unless I can conquer time and death, then there's no question of conquering anything else. If I myself, just like Prabhupada gives the example of Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great, he conquered so many empires, but because he didn't know how to properly set up a proper administration, after he conquered one empire and moved on to conquer the next, the previous empire fell apart and he lost that empire. So by the time he finished, he had nothing. Maybe he got some mileage credit for all the places he visited. Except for that, we didn't wind up in anything. He, according to Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Prabhupāda, he came to one place and they arrested a thief in India, actually. And they brought him before Alexander the Great, and Alexander the Great pronounced judgment that the thief should be killed. So the thief said, wait a second, you have no right to judge me. He said, it's true I'm a thief, but who are you? I'm a little thief, but you're also a thief. You're just a bigger thief, that's all. I'm stealing a few cucumbers and you're stealing empires. So Alexander the Great thought about it and said, that's true, I'm just a big thief. I'm just stealing empires from people. So then he gave up his conquest, went back to, I guess, Greece and died on the way out. Krishna didn't give him enough mileage credit to get back. In any case, the fact is that it is all just a misconception that we're independent and that we can do whatever we want here. And that's all due to envy. Enviousness of the fact that we're 100% controlled. Our only choice is to serve Krishna or to serve Maya. That's our only choice. It's not like there's a third choice. Because we can take the position, while we're serving Krishna, we can also serve Maya. But that means sometimes we'll be a little conscious and other times we'll be more unconscious. One time, Giriraj Maharaj was walking on the beach with Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada gave a philosophical explanation of something. And Giriraj Maharaj said, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. I was in Maya, I didn't understand. And Srila Prabhupada began to chuckle and said, you were in Maya. He said, you're always in Maya. Sometimes when you hear something, then you become a little enlightened. But until we actually become conscious of Krishna, our position is, as long as we're identifying in the slightest with this material body, or with this material mind, as long as we're not actually conscious of Krishna, then we're influenced by the illusory energy. Sometimes we'll be more influenced, sometimes less. The process of devotional service will help us gradually go from the mode of ignorance to the mode of passion to the mode of goodness beyond the influence of the mode's material nature. But as long as we're in the material energy, being influenced by it, we should not think ourselves independent and free to do whatever we like. Instead, we should learn how to gradually, in all activities, take shelter of Krishna, find out what he wants us to do, and therefore become free from the influence of the lower modes, come to the higher modes, and from the higher modes, gradually come to our actual position of Krishna's servant. This is more easily understood when we come to goodness. Just like if we want to fly, I'll fly tomorrow, from here to Denver. So it's much easier to go to the airport if you want to fly to Denver. If you think, why should I bother going to the airport, so much trouble, let me go to the roof of my house and put out my thumb as the plane passes by, maybe they'll stop and pick me up. Probably they'll give me a discount if there's any extra seats. No, it's very unlikely there's a plane that's going to fly by and pick you up from the roof of your house. It's much easier if you go to the airport and buy a ticket and get on the plane there. Similarly, if we want to go back to the spiritual world or come to the spiritual level of consciousness, it's much easier first to come to goodness and from there become qualified to get on a plane and go back to the spiritual world by coming to airplane. Just going to the airport is not guaranteed that you'll actually get on a plane and go to your destination. But it's certainly helpful to do that, because that's where all the airplanes are that take you to your destinations. Similarly, if we wanted to go back to the spiritual world, all the Vaikuntha planets, all the good Vaikuntha airplanes are parked in the mode of pure goodness. So at least we have to go to goodness, and there we can find out how to come to good, pure goodness, become eligible to get on a Vaikuntha airplane. It's going either to Vaikuntha or Goloka Vrindavan or some Leela Krishna has in the material world, and gradually revive our original position. Otherwise, those who are envious say that there's no such thing as the mode of goodness, that everyone should become more passionate, that will help society progress it. The gross national product is dependent on you to work harder. You're not making enough money. If everyone became a renunciate, if everyone took up this idea that we shouldn't smoke cigarettes, we shouldn't take alcohol, we shouldn't gamble, then the gross national product would go down and the whole United States would fail. So let's support America, engage in more sinful activities, keep the gross national product up, and even if you become a dog in your next lifetime, because you work so hard for your country, certainly you'll take birth as a dog in America. And maybe there'll be some welfare benefit for you. But this is not recommended by Krishna. This type of philosophy, mentality, is just a product of bewilderment. So, thank you. Any questions? Comments? Yeah, where is he now? His prophet used to say. Alexander the Great was great, but where is he now? He may not be so great. So he was in the body of some person who was considered in the estimation of some persons great. But ultimately he realized he wasn't so great. And under the laws of nature, undoubtedly, in his next lifetime, he was probably less great. After all, someone may have even conquered the universe some 15,000 lifetimes ago of Brahma. But who's remembered him? And where is he now? Who remembers anyone from the last millennium? And who, after we leave our body, even if we become glorified to some degree, so what? They'll all be forgotten in the course of time. Even the greatest conquerors. Muchukunda, he conquered practically the whole universe. He was a great king. But eventually, his time passed, which was not a very much time, relative time. He was completely forgotten. No one remembered. All his ancestors died. All his relatives died. All his people who came after him died. Even the people that had heard of him died. And therefore, he was a nobody. But only because he met Krishna, he realized he became a somebody. Otherwise, he was a nobody. Thank you very much. Grandhara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. Some of the Bhakti Vrinda Shri.